Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hello there, Sharks fans. Welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 38. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude,
what's up? It's the Brant Myers episode, dude.
Nice, dude, nice.
Brant Myers, a famous number 38 in Sharks history. Another one, Rob Davison wore number 38 for a while.
Rob Davison.
Yes,
the curse of Rob Davison.
The curse of Rob Davison.
Hasn't paid off this year yet.
No, not really.
Give him time.
Michael Sikora.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not really.
Yikes. Didn't he have like a really bad mullet?
Oh, man.
He did.
I don't really have that great of a memory of Michael Sikora.
Yeah. I remember he was big.
He was big.
He was kind of big.
Didn't stay in the league that long.
I want you to consider this.
Mm.
Is it possible that Alexei Semenov is actually Michael Sikora and he's still on the team?
It is possible. That's interesting. I've never seen them in a room together, dude. Mm. I think you've hit on something important here.
Food for thought, dude. Food for thought.
Very interesting.
Dude, today is a pretty big day.
It's a pretty big episode for Dudes on Hockey. And for those of you that read our blog, sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, you might have gotten a little preview of this, but the fact is we have an interview today with EJ Raddick.
Dude?
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
That's pretty sweet. For those of you who don't know or live under a rock, EJ Raddick is a big hockey analyst on ESPN, the sports leader.
That's right.
And he also appears on NHL Live, which is one of our favorite radio shows.
Yes.
So in terms of hockey voices in this country, EJ Raddick is near the top of the heap. It's probably Barry Melrose and then EJ Raddick right behind.
Yeah, he's a great commentator and he speaks his mind, which I think is something that Mike and I enjoy.
Yeah, right.
Is that he doesn't pull any punches and he always has something interesting to say. So we're looking forward to talking
to him. We'll have that interview a little bit later on in the show. And I hope you all enjoy it. But first, we do have to talk about the Sharks, what's happened with the Sharks over the last week. Sharks, the slump sort of continued, didn't look great against Minnesota, coughed up another 3-goal lead, which was very frustrating to watch. And they lost to the Blues, which is a scrappy team trying to make the playoffs. And the Sharks just couldn't keep up with them for whatever reason.
The Blues are streaking in the right direction, too. Mm-hmm. That's a team, they really believe that they can do it. They're 2 points out right now, dude. They're 7-3 in their last 10. And the Blues, like Columbus, they just give us fits, man.
Yeah.
That's a team that, you know, I wouldn't be very excited if we drew the Blues, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah.
The Blues would give me...
The Blues?
I wasn't going to say that. I let you finish it, dude.
Yeah, I try.
Shame on you.
I always come up with the good jokes.
And they're missing some key players, too. So, mm-hmm. You know, you could say, well, we're down a bunch of guys. But, you know, they're missing a lot of guys, too. But, you know, the key is as we're getting into the next games here, where the Sharks turn the corner is really in Minnesota and St. Louis. And I don't want to throw the blame on someone, but I'm going to throw the blame around, dude.
Boucher.
Mm. It was getting tired.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's getting tired, but he let in some soft goals, especially in Minnesota. That one was really bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we can see that, you know, Nabby was challenged in these last two games, and he was up to the task.
He was
sure.
Great. Absolutely great. Kings and Ducks over the weekend won both games close. Sharks still not scoring a lot of goals, which is something that you can be concerned about, but it is doldrums of the season. I think, you know, EJ has some interesting things to say about that when we get to the interview a little bit later on, but the fact is that the Sharks do win the games. The Kings aren't a pushover. The Ducks are close to the playoffs as well, but we managed to beat both of them. And the Ducks less than 24 hours after the Kings. So I consider both of those wins to be really good. I'm happy with that.
Sure. These are teams that are hanging on for their lives and they're going to play extremely hard. And, you know, the games are going to be close.
Yeah.
We're going to see that, you know, probably continuously in the next couple weeks, you know, teams that are still alive that are going to keep the game close. So, you know, a win is a win. 2 points are 2 points. And, you know, we're, as of today, 1 point behind the Detroit Red Wings. And, you know, we're taping this before the Phoenix game tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hopefully by the end of the night, you know, the Flyers will have gotten the better end of the Red Wings. And maybe the Sharks will be back on top. Dude, back on top.
I hope so. But We'll be talking a little bit more about predictions at the end of the show, but now we're going to get to the main part, the reason, hope maybe, why you're listening to this episode.
Jody Shelley Sings?
Jody Shelley Sings, maybe in the next episode. Oh. But new listeners, welcome, and I hope you enjoy the interview. Here it is. All right, it's our pleasure to have ESPN hockey analyst, special guest on NHL Live, and starting today, new Sharks fan, EJ Raddick on Dudes on Hockey. EJ, do you realize that you are by far the coolest person to ever appear on the podcast so far?
Well, that probably says more about you guys than me. I don't know if I'm a new Sharks fan. I mean, I like the Sharks. I mean, I don't really root for any one team because I don't want to be perceived as a biased reporter. But, the Sharks, I think that their organization has been one that really gets it as far as dealing with the media. And from that standpoint, it's been, it's always enjoyable to work with them.
Hey, EJ, we always love the trade deadline, but the Moan Huskins trade kind of came out of left field for us as far as we didn't hear anything about it in the rumor mill. Can you kind of give us some insight as maybe how that deal came about?
I think it was probably one of those ones. First of all, a lot of times you don't hear about, these deals because the managers are good at really keeping the things that they're really doing close to the vest, and what you end up having is a lot of people are guessing as to what's happening, and then you have also participants who are in the process in one way, shape, or form, managers who are involved with, who are not involved with particular deals, or agents, or different players commenting on things, and really not always aware of exactly what's going on, or trying to drive another agenda. I mean, that's the other thing that happens, and that's why you have rumors as well. But I think that one probably came about because I think the Ducks were probably deciding on what they wanted to do going forward with a lot of the guys that they have that are potential, unrestricted free agents in the future. And they probably had looked at the list of their guys, which was numerous, and said, okay, these are some guys that we're willing to hold on to and see if we can re-sign. And here are some other guys we don't think we're going to re-sign because we have pretty serious, significant salary cap implications for the future. So I think it was kind of one of those deals that probably occurred later in the process. And I think from what I understand, San Jose was talking to Ottawa about the possibility of a Chris Neal. So I think they were looking for the type of player that they ended up with in Travis Moan, a kind of third line, tough player that can kind of play the two-way game and be helpful in different areas on the back end of the offense. And I think Huskins is a guy who's been hurt for a while, but he's a guy with Stanley Cup experience, and he's a guy that I think can help him a lot down the road.
Yeah, the Chris Neal deal was something that we had sort of heard rumors about. We thought that maybe be the deal that the Sharks were chewing on, and sort of it was a little surprising maybe that deal didn't work out with the Sharks, but even more surprising to us, at least, was that Chris Neal wasn't traded at all, especially when they said that the contract talks broke down between him and the Senators. Any update on what's going on with Chris Neal, or would he be a draft day trade, possibly?
Well, it's possible, but I think I think teams that are interested in the Chris Neal right now are probably just going to wait until July 1st. I mean, he's not the type of player, in my mind, that you're going to go out and trade draft picks just to get us right. I think that he's a guy you wait till July 1st and you see where he's at. There's ways that people send messages to the agents about interest in players before July 1st, and I think there's a way to get that message to him, to the agent, if you're interested in acquiring him. But that's one of those things. It's a tough break for the Senators. I guess you could say it was an error in judgment by Brian Murray, the manager there, because you never want to be caught with assets, especially if you don't think you're going to re-sign them. Now, if Ottawa re-signs Neal, I mean, I guess all is forgotten in that regard, but I think that's one of those things that he probably thought of. From what I understand, he thought, he was working Detroit, he was working San Jose, trying to make a deal there. When San Jose fell out of it, it probably happened late in the day. As you guys know, that trade went down later, closer to the 3:00 Eastern time deadline. So he probably just got caught there with not anybody else interested in Neal. And I think it's just tough right now because really with the economy the way it is and with the uncertainty with the salary cap in the future and so many teams being close to the cap, just for this year, like a team like Detroit, I'm sure they would have been interested in doing something with Neal if they could have, traded a pick or something off their, you know, that wasn't off their roster to get him, but with their salary cap, they would have had to trade something off their roster, and what I heard was Kurt Maltby. And personally, I would rather just keep Kurt Maltby going forward because I think that you know, his experience and his background with winning, I think, is something that'll help them this year in the playoffs more so than a Chris Neal, who, although is a little younger, you know, has not been involved in winning a championship. And I think you know, as Jug Wilson is finding out in San Jose, you like to add those pieces, and those are those role players. It's important that they know and they've been involved with winning.
We've certainly been impressed with Travis Moen. We're glad that that deal went down. But we're curious about what some of your opinions are on some of the Sharks' younger players and how they're viewed in the general hockey community. Would you say, who would you say is maybe the most valuable young player on the Sharks' roster currently?
Well, that's a good question. I guess Setoguchi would probably be high on the list because he's had such a good year this year. He's a first-round draft pick, so, I mean, he wasn't a guy that came out of nowhere. I think he'd be he's impressive. I think that, you know, the fact that he's been playing with Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau for a good part of the season is a pretty big plus for him, you know, to be in that situation, and he's taking advantage of that opportunity. I think, you know, a kid like Mark Edward Vlasic, who came in at such a young age, I mean, he's still really a baby back there on defense, and he's been playing in the National Hockey League since he was 18 years old. I think he's a guy that... you know, teams are always looking for defensemen, and they're probably watching his continuing development and the fact that he's been able to, you know, to play in the league and play in big games already at such a young age. I mean, he's probably, just because of his positions on defense, he might be the guy that, you know, that most teams look at going forward and say, hey, we really think this kid's got a future in this league just because he's been at it so long already, and he seems like he's an improving player for them. So those are the two guys I think I'd probably focus on.
Yeah, well, another young defenseman the Sharks have, Christian Ehrhoff, has sort of been in and out of the lineup a little bit in the doghouse.
He's hurt now, Mike. He's hurt.
Excuse me, but it maybe hurt, maybe not. But is that a guy that you think might have value? We just got signed to a long-term deal, and I know Sharks fans are sort of two minds about this guy, but he can skate, and I just sort of want, you know, we look for the sort of general opinion out there because we're so focused on the Sharks, we don't really see what Christian Ehrhoff is really viewed as out there.
Yeah, I think that I think the addition of Boyle and Blake has been important for a guy like him because I just think, you know, with Vlasic and Ehrhoff and guys like that, I thought they were playing above their slotting. You know, when I say that, it's like they were getting, you know, they were key guys in the past on that defense because you didn't really have a legitimate number one. A guy that you knew was going to be that number one defenseman and take minutes, and now you have that with Danny Boyle. So when I say slotting, it puts other guys in that right second role, third role, fourth role, fifth role, sixth role, and you know, I think those guys have been helped by that. I think it's been, you know, it's been a great year for the Sharks so far, but like the last couple of weeks have been tough, I think, because the races have heated up so much on both sides, particularly in the West, and you know, I think every night the teams they are playing. Are playing in, you know, kind of life and death games, and I think for the Sharks, and they've had a bunch of injuries too, but I think, you know, for the Sharks, there isn't that urgency right now. I mean, these guys, a lot of these guys have been, you know, in the playoffs a bunch of different times, and they understand what their task is this year in San Jose. They know that, you know, hey, it's about getting to the finals and winning the Stanley Cup for them, and I think, like a lot of teams that are really teams at the top of their conferences, I think Boston and Detroit are kind of going through the same thing, Washington a little bit of the same thing, is that, you know, night after night after night right now, it's tough to bring that same urgency when you already, you know, have built up pretty good margins to be in the playoffs. So I think you know, I think that's part of it right now for the Sharks, and I think, you know, some of those guys are going through, you know, more than others, and, you know, Ehrhoff, you know, if he's fallen to the doghouse a little bit there, that's probably part of, you know, the issue for him. But early in the year, I thought he played very well, and I think that, you know, they want to get him back on track because, you know, I don't see where they're going to – I don't see the guys that are behind him in the lineup as being guys that really can replace him, you know, in the things that he's able to do for them. So I think they need to get him back on track, and I think that if, you know, if Coach McClellan is pushing him, I think it's, you know, because he wants him at a certain level come playoff time.
You mean you're not a big Alexei Semenov fan?
Well, not really.
That makes three of us. Really. Yeah.
We call him Frankenstein out here, EJ.
Well, I mean, I don't want to bring in any monstrous kind of issues here, but, you know. But hey, listen, you know, these guys, but you know, in a salary cap world, I mean, we can kid around, but you got to have certain guys like that at a certain level, and if they can, and that's what I mean by slotting. If you can have guys in certain roles, you know, that's important. And you know, in his case, he's kind of a very back end guy for them. And I think when everybody's healthy, I don't think he's a guy that's even in the lineup for them. But you know, I think that you want to, you got to have depth throughout your group, and you really never have enough defensemen. And you know, you hope with guys like that that you have them, and that they don't have to play too much.
I think some of our listeners may not know that actually earlier in your career you were a scout for the Stars, and I wanted to ask you about that. I mean, how did your experience as a scout sort of affect the way that you approach the game now as an analyst? You know, talking on television and on the radio. So, what are the kinds of things that you look for now, maybe that you didn't look for before you were a scout?
Well, I just think for me it was such a great opportunity. I was living in Dallas when the Stars arrived there from Minnesota, and I got in that way, because it was a new market and because there wasn't a ton of coverage around, that I was able to kind of build relationships with a lot of the people, the coaching staff and the management group there. And when I left Dallas to return to New York, I brought it to the attention of Les Jackson, who's now the co-general manager in Dallas, and he was good enough to really give me an opportunity, kind of as a, you know, an apprentice almost, to go and to, you know, to do it and to kind of do it as a, to see if I liked it and to see if, you know, they liked what I was able to provide for them. And we had a good relationship, you know, in that way for about a year and a half or closer to 2 years, until I ended up at ESPN, when it was kind of it would have been kind of tricky to do both of those things together. But I just think the opportunity of being able to be around the scouts, I think, was important. The other scouts, a lot of them were great guys. In particular, you know, a sad story is Ace Bailey, who was tragically killed in 9/11. He was on one of the planes that went into the World Trade Center, and he was a scout for the Los Angeles Kings based in Boston, and he was a terrific guy as far as really making me feel comfortable amongst that fraternity of scouts, because most of those guys are ex-players or, you know, guys who've been around hockey in one way or another for a long time. And, you know, guys like that, Peter Mahovlich, who now scouts for the Atlanta Thrashers, guys like that really made me feel comfortable. And being around them and talking to them and kind of getting their thoughts on, you know, what they look for and what's going on in the league and just the way they approach things. You know, you try to listen, or at least I tried to listen and just take a lot of things in from them. I think watching the game as a scout and focusing on a couple of players, particularly each night when I would go to games, that was a good way to really watch and see the little things that go on in a game. And I just think there were just so many things that came out of it for me, dealing with dealing with some of the management people and the things they look for from a bigger picture standpoint. I can't say enough about all the different things that they were able to come out of it. And now I just try to bring that forward. When I'm covering, the games and talking about hockey, I try to, you know, I draw on that experience and I try to, you know, bring that into almost, and it helps me really in almost every area that, of the game that we discussed. So it was invaluable for me, and I really feel quite lucky to have been able to do it and to have been able to be around, you know, have been around all those people with such experience, because, that's really, you know, where you can learn so much is when you're around people who've been through it and really have a good understanding of it.
Was there anybody that you scouted or recommended that ended up being a National Hockey League player? Is there a guy that you can point to in the league, past or present, you can say, you know, that's the guy that I saw and thought would be great?
Well, I would tell you what I did. My job really is, again, as an apprentice role more than anything, or part-time scout, was to continually watch NHL and AHL games, and mostly NHL games, and just provide reports on players that, in particular, that might become free agents or might be available, and keep the Stars aware of the things that, I was hearing and seeing in that way. And so I wasn't doing amateur scouting, which is very difficult. And, I don't say that I find it very difficult, but I think it is it's a tricky thing, because, you know, you're looking at kids who are 16 and 17 years old. And I think the key really to amateur scouting is upper management's decision to determine who they are as a team. If you know kind of what kind of team you want to build, that helps you in picking players in amateur. But, for me, I think and this really wasn't even a guy that I would say, you know, I recommended him, because the team knew who he was. But I think the one guy that Dallas signed that, my reports played any role, and then I would say a very limited role because they knew him, was Sean Chambers, who was playing in New Jersey when I was watching. I got to see him quite a bit there. He ended up re-signing with Dallas, and he was part of their championship team in 1999. So I would say he was probably the one guy. But again, the Stars were really familiar with him because he had played in their organization in the past. And I think really the most important thing about my role, and I think for any pro scout, is just to continually stay on top of the players and really know the players that are in the league, because players get a reputation, but they're growing or going backward each and every day that they're playing. And sometimes if you're not on top of how guys are playing in a particular season or a particular point in their career, you could really end up making a bad deal for yourself, getting a player that's really on the downside. Or, you know, on the flip side, you could end up making a really good deal for yourself, getting a player that's really on the way up. So I think that's the key in post-scouting, and that's what, you know, I was trying to do, was just keep a, you know, a daily help with the group of guys that were doing it, keeping a daily monitor of as many of the players in the league as possible, and really keep up to date with where guys were at, because that's where teams get hurt in trades and in free agent acquisitions, when they're not aware of where a player is in his career. And those kind of mistakes now in a salary cap era, you know, are really can really be devastating.
We've got one more question for you, EJ. We know you're a real big Bruce Springsteen fan, so we want to know,
yes,
which Springsteen song do you think best describes the Sharks this year? Reason to Believe, You'll Be Coming Down, or Leap of Faith?
That's a good question. I guess it's got to be Reason to Believe. I mean, you know, this is a team that has got off to a great start this year, and you know, like we say, I mean, this time of year, it's a little bit tough to get excited night after night after night when you build such a big lead. But you know, I think they got a good group there. Now I see about 6 or 7 teams I think can win the Stanley Cup. A thing I think I'd be worried about a little bit in the West is kind of the sudden emergence of the Vancouver Canucks as more of a potential danger, because you know, they, with Matt Sundin kind of in the mix now and playing, you know, kind of found his legs, he helps them in terms of balance to their offense. Now they have really, you know, when things are going well and he's playing well, they have two lines that can provide offense, and they have a pretty good group of defensemen, and they have a great goalie. So, you know, they're a team now, in addition to San Jose and Detroit, which I think could be a troublesome in the West. So I think if I'm San Jose, I'd be a little worried about that. But, you know, they've had a great season, and, you know, they know what the goal is there. And, you know, they've got some guys, the additions of Blake and Boyle and, you know, some of the other guys they've brought in that have been through it, and that should help them when they hit adversity. And it's good to have that they've hit a little bit of a bump, you know, in February and early March, because, you know, if you go through the season without any of that stuff and then you find yourself in some trouble in the playoffs, sometimes teams don't react to it well. So I'll say Reason to Believe. And, you know, I'm hoping for you San Jose Shark fans out there, because I know it's your great fan base, and I know they're dying to bring that Stanley Cup to Northern California. So that should be, it should be a fun spring, and we'll see how they do.
Yeah, well, EJ, we really want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and I hope we can buy you a beer if we see you out here in San Jose for the Stanley Cup Finals, because that'd be a great thing for this city. So thank you so much for the time you took.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and I will definitely accept that invitation.
All right. Beers on Dudes on Hockey, that's for sure.
Thanks, EJ.
All right, thank you.
So, dude, what'd you think?
Dude, I have to say, if this was the Olympics of podcasts, the Russians gave us a 9.7.
I think you're right. I think it went pretty damn well. Actually, you know what I think?
Yeah! Nice!
That's what I think.
Dude, EJ rocks, and we really appreciated him being a part of the show. And he's a man of his word, man.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't you give him a little bit of the backstory of how this came to be?
So we mentioned on episode 34, of those of you who have listened to all of our episodes, and for that we thank you very much. If not, you should go back to episode 34 and listen to it. It was awesome.
Darn it.
But in episode 34, we relayed our story of our trip to New York, where we went to the NHL store, and we purposely went right before they start recording NHL Live, which is the radio show that EJ appears upon. And we're walking around the store, and there he is. He's wandering around. We go up and talk to him. Super nice guy. He talked to us for much longer than, frankly, I thought he would. I thought he would sort of give us a cursory hello, maybe, shoot the bull for a couple minutes and then beg off, go up to the studio.
Yeah, it was a nice, like, 10-minute conversation.
Yeah.
And he went right upstairs and started the show after that.
And they gave us a shout-out on the show, which was cool, They pointed to us. If you watched it on NHL Network that day, you would see us on the camera, and they waved to us and everything. He really couldn't have been nicer. And he said sort of at the end of the interview, which we didn't mention in the episode, your wife said, hey, these guys have a podcast. And then he said out of the blue, without any prompting, oh, if you want me to come on there, I'd be happy to do it. And we said, yeah. Sure, be happy to do it. So he gave us his contact information, and like you said, true to his word, came on the show, gave us some really good insight, I thought. There was some interesting answers, I thought, and some insights about the league. And I really appreciate it. I thought it was awesome.
It's interesting that he kind of picked out, has Setoguchi as the prospect that, of our young players that he kind of found to be the most intriguing and promising, which I think we would agree for the, first half of the season that might be the case. Now, is he getting a little tired, or, that whole top line has kind of fallen off a little bit, which maybe is contributing to why we're not scoring as many goals. But interesting to hear from a former scout and someone who kind of takes a look at the whole league that, that's the guy that he kind of zeroed in on right away as a player of interest. And we've seen for most of the year why that is.
Yeah, absolutely. And he mentioned Vlasic too. And I think, I don't think anybody could argue with those two picks.
Not at all.
So it was good to get that kind of perspective because he watches a ton of games. He talks to a ton of players. He has an amazing number of contacts. He actually broke some of the stories on the trade deadline day before TSN did, which is pretty amazing. So he's got contacts everywhere. He really knows the game. He really knows what's happening in the league. And so it was great to get that kind of perspective.
To hear his perspective on the Chris Neal deal, that it sounded like Ottawa wanted a roster player back.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were asking for Kurt Malpe from the Red Wings, who are they asking for from us? I mean, they must have been asking for, you got to guess that, maybe they asked for Torrey Mitchell.
Yeah.
Maybe they asked for, I'm trying to think of
Jeremy Roenick. If he wasn't hurt at the time.
I guess. I mean, they might have asked for someone that clearly Doug Wilson wasn't willing to give up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way he should have traded Torrey Mitchell for Chris Neal or anybody in that sort of category of an impact third or fourth liner, So great interview, dude.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Hopefully that means, since we don't totally suck at it, hopefully that means we'll have some more guests, for future shows. Who knows who it will be, but maybe we'll try to find some more people because I think that went pretty well. And I hope our listeners liked it. And I hope you guys will leave feedback for us at our blog or at dudesonhockey.com or on iTunes, Positive feedback on iTunes, always a good thing. So anyway, we do have an email that I want to get to before we wrap this whole thing up. And it's from our friend Jeremy, which is, I think this is a really good email. So I definitely want to spend some time on it. And he says, dudes, with the regular season winding down, seems like a good time to talk awards. I wanted to get the dudes' take on the Norris. I think it's too bad that award nominations are often predicated on a team making the postseason. That's because I'd say the hands-down winner should be Mark Streit. You look at what he's done on a god-awful team, and it's really quite spectacular. Beyond all the point categories he leads the team in, it's the plus-minus that is the most impressive. He's known as a power play guy, but you don't earn pluses on the power play. So for him to lead the team in plus-minus is something about his defensive ability. What do you think? And he says he knows it'll be hard for Mike to put aside his man crush in answering this. And Jeremy's pick for the finalists are Green, Boyle, and Chara. So I want to get your take. I think Jeremy might be a little surprised about my take on the whole Norris. So I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, okay. Oh, boy. I think Mark Streit has exceeded expectations, I think, of people around the league. He was really known as just a specialist. He's proven he can play in overall situations, but just kind of doing a little research, he's not even in the top five of their defensemen in shorthanded time on the ice, which, still sort of exposes the fact that he's not a complete defenseman.
Right.
He's not a number one guy who you're going to run out there to stop anybody. He's improving his game. And, maybe he's going to turn into a Dan Boyle type more complete player, which is really going to help the Islanders. So I'm not discounting his value, but he's not a Norris Trophy candidate to me.
If you don't play, I think that's a good point. If you don't play shorthanded, then you're not one of the best defensemen in the league, period.
Yeah, if you're not playing regular shifts shorthanded, then you're not one of the best defensemen in the league. Agreed. I just totally repeated you.
Nice.
Thank you. It's repeat day. Dude, I got to say that I would... say Chara and and Green are for sure. Although, you know, Chara and Weidman's numbers are pretty similar.
Close, yeah.
Actually, and Weidman's numbers on some places are better, but you got to think that Chara is... Are they a pair?
I don't know. The answer to
so,
that.
You know, you got to think that he's still the number one guy mm-hmm. in that situation. So if you're going Chara, you're going Green, then I can't say that I disagree. You know, I'm going to run with Dan Boyle just because the impact that he's had on this team cannot be ignored. And, you know, Dan Boyle has been a monster. And when he's been in the lineup, the Sharks are a better team. And when he's not, we saw how poorly they did, you know, controlling the puck in both ends of the ice. So I'm going to agree with what Jeremy said.
I think it's a good point, and I think if everything worked out, then that might be the case. But I'm going to sort of expose my pessimistic, cynical side here and say that Boyle has no chance.
Okay. Can I make a prediction of who you're going to say should be in his place?
Okay.
You're going to say Duncan Keith.
No, I'm not going to.
Ah, dude.
I'm not. Okay. I think it's going to be a Red Wing. I think it's going to be either Rafalski or Lidstrom. If Lidstrom gets a nomination by default, in my view. He's, you know, one of the best defensemen in the last 20 years. He played a lot of games. He's still got good, really good numbers. Maybe not amazing numbers. He's still got very good numbers. Rafalski has pretty much better numbers across the board. It's going to be one of those two guys, and Boyle has no shot. Boyle's going to be behind both of those guys, I think. And it sucks, and I agree with a lot of your arguments, but I think Boyle, he's on the West Coast. You know, I think that's going to hurt.
That didn't hurt Joe.
I think it's going to hurt a little bit. Well, Joe had 125 points. You know, you can't ignore that kind of stuff. But Boyle is not... If Boyle led the league in defensive points, then Boyle would be in. But right now, I think he's, what, fifth or sixth or something along those lines?
He's tied for fifth with Lidstrom.
Tied
48.
For fifth with Lidstrom. You think people are going to choose Boyle over Lidstrom? I don't think it's going to happen, especially if the Red Wings finish ahead of the Sharks or we're real close. So that's my cynical mind talking, and it kind of bums me out, but that's what I think. It's too bad.
I think you better look over your shoulder when you walk out of the room, dude.
You're going to give me a little punch in the kidney, huh?
No, I won't do it, but I wouldn't put it past Tanya Harding.
Okay, well, let's finish up with some predictions for the coming week. We got Phoenix tonight because we're recording a Tuesday evening before the Phoenix game. And we have Nashville and Dallas and Colorado, so the hectic schedule continues. But what do you think? You know, the Sharks aren't scoring. I don't think any of those games are going to be a blowout, to be honest with you.
I'm going to disagree with you on tonight. Phoenix has phoned it in, dude.
You think so?
They've phoned it in. You look at their results in the last week. They lost to Nashville 2-0. They lost to Jersey 5-2. They lost to Detroit 3-2. Islanders 3-2. Buffalo 5-1. They beat Boston in Boston, which, I mean, they must have made a pact with Satan himself.
I think it says more about Boston than it does about
Chicago. They lost to St. Louis 3-1, lost to Nashville 4. They haven't scored more than two goals since February 21st.
Yeah.
So they're not going to score more than two goals tonight. I think this is the Sharks' breakout party that we've been waiting for offensively. I'm going to say 5-1 tonight, dude.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about Nashville being maybe the tough game. Although the Stars game could be really tough because there's rumors that they might get some players back here coming soon. So Richard starts coming back or Morrow's in the lineup, then they're going to have a big psychological boost. And they're trying to jockey for position in the playoff standings. That's certainly going to be the toughest game of the week, I think.
The Dallas game?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the Dallas game will be more tough than the Nashville
Any game against the Stars is tough. Mm-hmm. And they're playing for a playoff spot, too. I mean, right now, they're the 8. Nashville's the 7. Those teams are jockeying around for position. And they both need points. They need wins. Seeing them kind of pull the Ducks approach and just try and get a point,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
How can we get a point out of you, you know, in some way? And for some teams it works, some it doesn't. But, you know, how can we somehow milk a point out of this?
Yeah. And Colorado, I think that should be hopefully a pretty easy win. But both the Saturday and Sunday games, I think, are kind of weird times. So that kind of seems to throw the Sharks off. Isn't the Saturday game at 1 o'clock? That's kind of strange.
Yeah, you know.
That's not going to work in the Sharks' favor, I don't think.
I think you're confusing something here, dude. Semenov is Frankenstein. He's not Dracula. He can play during the day.
This is an excellent point. I'm glad. Yes, I never really thought about it that way, but you're right.
So. It's too bad that some of the Sharks' older players aren't going to be in the ice because, you know, Lemieux and Roenick probably get up about 5 in the morning.
That's right. You know, they got the Matlock reruns and...
That's what time the home kind of stirs them up. I can't wait. I want JR and Greer back.
Yeah,
bad.
Yeah, we need those guys.
Really, badly. So, yeah. Dude, we should... I think the Sharks are going to roll 4 wins this week.
Wow.
4 wins. You know, they might give up a point to Dallas. That could be an overtime game. Wouldn't be surprised if the Nashville game was overtime, too, just because both those teams might play really tight, close to the vest, just trying to get a point any way they can.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sharks are going to have an 8-point week by the time we talk to you before the Chicago game. We're going to have 108 points, dude.
Nice, dude. I think that would be a Sharks record if they had 108. I think that would tie their record. I think they had 108 or 109 once.
Dude, can I ask you a question before we stop?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, because we know the Sharks have kind of been near the middle of the pack here. What can you name a team that has not lost in their last 10 games?
Has not lost.
A regulation game. 8-0-2 in their last 10, dude.
Well, I know it's not Vancouver. Who is that? I know. I saw that the other day.
This team you were a non-believer about 2 weeks ago.
I was a non-believer. Well, okay, you're going to have to break it to me. Cause
Pittsburgh.
That's right.
8-0-2, and they've shot all the way up to the 5, and they might pass Philly. They could end up being the 4.
Yeah.
So they've come all the way back. Dude, can you name the 2 other teams in the National Hockey League that have 8 wins in their last 10 games? And I think none of them are Western Conference teams.
None of them are Western Conference teams. I think Carolina's one of those teams.
No.
No, I thought Carolina was streaky.
5-3-2 in their last 10.
Hmm. Then the Islanders?
No. Jersey.
Yeah, Jersey.
And Atlanta.
Oh, really?
Hot Atlanta. Although the Islanders are 6-2-2.
Yeah.
Why are all the bad teams all of a sudden playing well?
I don't know.
Tampa Bay's even 4-4-2. They're like, we don't want the last pick.
No, just dump it like everybody else. Jeez.
Whereas Gretzky's like, please.
Too much self-respect, Eastern Conference teams. How dare you?
If the Coyotes continue to slide, doesn't Gretzky have to be responsible for some of this?
Sure, but there's no structure in place for him to assume any responsibility. His ex-agent is the GM. He's the owner. No one's ever going to fire him. He's got tenure, man. He's never going to get fired. We'll see him in like 2050. He'll still be there.
So it's like if he went to his office, you know, like if he owned a place of business, went to his office, slaughtered a pig, and threw blood all over the windows and the carpet, lit a fire, got a couple of hookers,
right,
and then left, he still wouldn't get fired.
Yeah, unless he gambled. Or said naughty words to the media.
Nice, dude.
I think we got to wrap it up for this week's Dudes on Hockey. I hope you enjoyed the interview, and I hope you'll definitely join us again next week, same time, same place.
Bye, dude.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.